up, jingle horse, pick up your feet. Jingle around the clock. Mix and mingle in the jingle and beat. That's the jingle bell rock.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bells chime in, jingle bell time.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's the Christmas season, and hope you're doing all very well. And you know what? We hear like the Christmas season, so we thought we'd do a little special called the Shane Black Christmas. Join us, won't you? With special hosts, me, and also Brian, I should say, and also.
Oh, this is Edwin.
And.
This is Ava.
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Fabulous. How you doing?
Oh, I'm super. You know, thank you for asking and everything. I'm glad we could come together and everything. It's the season for coming together and everything. But, you know, sometimes that can be a little too schmalty, you know? Not schmalty, but, like, just too schmaltzy. I think that was the correct term I was trying to go for, schmaltzy. And a little too, like, in your face. And every Christmas special usually has either finding the true meaning of Christmas or saving Santa Claus for some reason. Because, you know, omnipotent person that can do anything, but always needs saving. Especially when he crash landed in Pac-Land in the Pac-Man cartoon. But enough about that. We all thought, actually, why don't we make this a fun Christmas season? And why don't we go through some of the films of Shane Black, which, again, we're calling A Shane Black Christmas. If you don't know who Shane Black is, he's a screenwriter, director, and a lot of his movies take place during Christmas. And I just remembered what I was trying to find off the air. And I'm going to look it up right now as I do it. Edwin, you're a fan of Shane Black, aren't you?
I am.
Yeah?
You'd be correct in saying that.
Do you remember like a movie of his that you first saw that stuck with you?
I think the very first Shane Black movie would probably be, I think it was actually The Last Boy Scout.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that he wrote it. And then I went back and I saw the rest. Like, that's when I realized, oh, Lethal Weapon. After that, and then the rest, The Long Kiss Goodnight, then when he started directing Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and The Nice Guys, and obviously Iron Man 3.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, exactly. Ava, you're a big fan of like older Hollywood and everything. Have you seen some of these movies before of Shane Black or anything? Are you familiar with
some of them? I mean, I did grow up seeing Lethal Weapon. My dad did like that, so that one I did see when I was younger. Mm. But not all of them.
Yeah.
Not until we met.
Yeah.
And I kind of like, well, we need to go through these. I think, I don't know what it was. I think it was probably Lethal Weapon that I think you liked and you remember liking. And then we saw Iron Man 3, and I think that's when you kind of like saw the connection. And then you were willing to watch The Nice Guys. And
mm-hmm.
Actually, I think last week I said something wrong. But Brian, you called me out on it because I think I said, oh, Die Hard. Shane Black was Die Hard.
He wasn't calling you out. It was correcting. That's a big
thing. Oh, no, you were correcting. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah. Sorry. You were correcting me. And I'm like, but I could have swore.
Hey, idiot.
Well, that's kind of how I felt like. You know, yeah. I felt a little attacked. Right. I think, as soon as. No?
No.
No? Okay. So anyway, I was like, but wait a minute. When Brian called me out and made me look a total ass, I'm like, wait, I know I heard that somewhere or read it somewhere. So now I got it. So he did not write it, but Joel Silver, the mm-hmm. producer of both Lethal Weapon and
Die Hard,
actually got an earlier draft of The Last Boy Scout.
Yeah.
And he took that original script written by Shane Black and turned it into Die Hard. I know Die Hard was from a book, but that's when he decided, right. Hey, Lethal Weapon came out. Let's add, you know, a buddy element to it, and let's set it on Christmas since Lethal Weapon did so well. So that's the connection.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Because, I mean, again, it's Christmas. It's violence. It's guns. It's a cop going on the edge who's already on the edge. It all is Shane Black. And one of the reasons why, why Shane Black likes Christmas, setting a lot of his stuff during Christmas, found this Entertainment Weekly article where he explains it. Basically, he states, it tends to be a touchstone for me, he admits. Christmas represents a little stutter in the march of days, a hush in which we have a chance to assess and retrospect our lives. I tend to think also that it just informs as a backdrop. The first time I noticed it was 3 days of the Condor, the Sidney Pollack film, where Christmas in the background adds this really odd, chilling counterpoint to the espionage plot. I also think that Christmas is just a thing of beauty, especially as it applies to places like Los Angeles, where it's not so obvious, and you have to dig for it. Like little nuggets. One night on Christmas Eve, I walked past a Mexican lunch wagon serving tacos, and I saw this little string, and on it was a little broken plastic figurine with a light bulb inside of it, of the Virgin Mary. And I thought, that's just a little hidden piece of magic. You know, all around the city are little slices, little icons of Christmas that are as effective and beautiful in it and of themselves as any 40-foot Christmas tree on the lawn of the White House. So that, in a lot of words, is the answer. And yeah, I mean, he is true. I do like that first part that he said, that it basically is like a retrospect of our lives and everything. You know, it's the end of the year. People are thinking, how was the year? We're coming together, that type of thing. And it does give a little kind of an added backdrop to it with that. And it is weird seeing Christmas in Los Angeles. Because normally in movies, you see, you know, the snow and everything, and it feels like Christmas. In Los Angeles, it's 70 degrees, and it's just a bunch of trees on the side of the road, you know, lit up in like Glendale or Burbank or something, because the city put it up and whatnot. But Shane Black himself got attention in the first movie, which we're going to be talking about in just a moment. He basically he was working as a typist for a temp agency, decided, with the help of his financial support from his parents during a 6-month development of a script, The Shadow Company, a supernatural thriller set in Vietnam. That got some attention with agents and everything, and eventually was handed, he helped write the Monster Squad, which got some attention, and that eventually led into Lethal Weapon, the movie we're going to be talking about right now.
He's the criminal's worst nightmare, a cop who enjoys the danger.
No guns, no jujitsu, just bring him down.
Do you really want to jump?
Well, then that's fine with me. Come on.
Wait a minute.
He was ready to retire. Now, he's going to wish he had.
Gun!
Raj, meet your new partner.
New partner? Too old for this.
If these guys can just stand each other...
What you got in there?
Boy and Smith?
A lot of old-timers carry those.
The bad guys don't stand a chance.
Don't kill anybody.
Don't kill anybody.
I'm too old for this.
Are you as good as you say you are?
Nobody can touch me.
Suppose we better register you as a lethal weapon.
You ever met anybody you didn't kill?
Well, I haven't killed you yet.
And Lethal Weapon itself is a 1987 American buddy cop action film directed by Richard Donner, starring Mel Gibson, Danny Glover, Gary Busey, and a host of others.
Tom Atkins. That's my boy right there.
Hell yeah, Tom Atkins. And one Darlene Love, who Christmas Connection has the best Christmas song ever written, I think. Christmas, which is the song you hear in Gremlins in the first outro. Christmas, look at come of the year. Darlene Love, who plays Danny Glover's wife in the movie. Lethal Weapon was a huge hit. Big hit for Mel Gibson. Danny Glover put them on the map and everything in a smooth sax playing every time. You know, it's going to be Lethal Weapon. Guys, what did we think of Lethal Weapon?
Good. I mean, like I said, I did grow up seeing it, but I haven't seen it in a long time. And, you know, we do try to kind of watch it every year, but it was like the most enjoyable this watch. It's pretty good movie. I mean, 80s nostalgia. Yeah. Shane Black to the max. I love like every scene. It has lights and, you know, they really try to pump out the Christmas look in it, and it's pretty good. I mean, the buddy cop thing is just great. You know, I don't know if this is the one where that was first born.
I think this is kind of like the first time where the formula
worked so
very
well.
That I think that was mostly of it.
Well, because we had normally, also 48 hours with Eddie Murphy and McNulty, which was it was basically a cop and a bad guy.
Right, but it wasn't comedic. I think this is the first time where I think it was a little bit more. I mean, the other 48 hours, you know, a little darker, but it was still more of an action movie. This one, I think the things that stick out are probably the things that I think Shane Black is mostly known for, and that is the buddy, the two characters and the family dynamic. Like, it really felt like I know the Cosby show was huge at the time, so I think the idea of Riggs being basically like a foster, you know, an adopted kid coming into the family, Murtaugh, is great. I think that's what makes the whole entire movie. The, you know, granted, you know, the action is whatever, you know, same old action, you know, movie, which is fine. But this watch, it was just the chemistry between them two, the family. And we didn't even talk about how this movie really starts. So, Brian, you mentioned how L.A., Christmas in L.A.
Yeah.
And the first thing you see is a naked prostitute or hooker.
High.
You know, basically surrounded by Hollywood snow, as I would say. Mm-hmm. That's
Cocaine.
Yeah. Michael Caine. So there's that. So that's what makes it really
Michael
LA.
Caine is in the corner telling her, jump, just jump.
So you see her, and then the next scene, you see Mel Gibson butt-ass naked.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the third scene, Murtaugh in the shower, and the family busts in. Like, there's nothing going on.
There's nothing wrong. There's nothing. That scene really kind of was like, what the hell? Like, I was going to ask you guys.
That took me aback.
Have you guys ever wished happy birthday to your dad while he's taking a bath?
No. And then I had... That's
and then
funny
kissing them. And then kissing them. Like happy birthday, dad. Mwah. While he's
and I commented, I'm like, she is way too old to be saying her dad
naked.
Oh,
yeah. The oldest daughter lingers.
She lingers.
Like,
there's two times.
There's no bubbles, by the way. It's not like there's bubbles covering his jaw.
There is a little bit. It's not like, it's
there
just,
wasn't enough.
I honestly think it's a real just like, you know, like an alpha move on Danny Glover's part to his son going, hey, I'm still King Dick over here.
But maybe families are like that. I remember in Friday, like, when Ice Cube had to go into the bathroom,
and the dad's
like taking the shit. Yeah, bathroom. Like, wow, this is awkward. So, or I don't know. So maybe it does happen, but
I'm gonna say no. Not in regular families.
Like the family, like, oh yeah, going into the bathtub, and you can see Danny Glover like kind of scared. Like, what is going on? Poor guy.
He's just wanting to relax. It's his birthday. He wants to chill. And then all of a sudden, happy birthday! And at first, he's startled, but then he just kind of like, oh yeah, this is an everyday thing.
Yeah, it did kind of seem like that.
My crazy kids busted in on me taking a bath. Oh my goodness. Yeah, no, she was way too old. All the kids were way too. It doesn't matter how old they are. It was weird. It was also like, what are you doing? Like, yeah, and birthday cake for breakfast? God.
I know. I was waiting for someone to drop the cake in the tub. I'm like, this is just a bad idea all around.
Yeah, this is going to be ruined. It's going to
like
get
usually you just see like a father getting woken up by a, you know, bombarded in bed. This one, bed. Different. They take like,
which Riggs does later.
Yeah, Riggs exactly.
Makes him
see,
up
the adopted son.
Riggs still on the right thing. Yes, he's not making it weird. He's not busting him on him in the tub. Like, it should have been reversed. Those scenes should have been reversed. The kid should have busted him, and then it would have been funnier if Riggs walked in while he was in the tub.
Agreed.
You know, just kind of relaxing.
That would have been funny.
Yeah, that would have been good.
But yeah, no, I think you brought up a really good point with the chemistry of this. And it does, if you watch, like, Lethal Weapon 2, 3, and 4, the chemistry through the whole cast is just, it's so good. Like, it's, that's what makes these movies, you know, fun. It's just the chemistry with everyone. Everyone is a big, and they kind of hammer the point in Lethal Weapon 4 when the end of the movie is song outro is why can't we be friends or something with, you know, various photos throughout the years and stuff like that. But it is the chemistry is through the roof in this movie, and that's what makes it work is the, you know, Mel Gibson and Danny Glover's friendship in this. Even though it is weird, Mel Gibson has made it weird to watch Mel Gibson movies, you know, with his some of his rants over the years, but still it's still
but it works though. It's so fun.
It shows why he was a huge action star. It was shows him why he was a movie star in the 90s, in the late 80s, early 90s, 2000, going into the 2000s. It shows why he was such a huge star is because he's so damn charming and such a fun character. It's just a fun actor.
Danny Glover is my favorite though.
Oh yeah.
he's so good in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just he's saying everything that we're feeling, like, I'm too old for this shit. And it's like,
I love it.
Yeah.
He's so right on. I feel like as a teenager, I'm like, yeah, I'm Riggs. Now,
now
so
we're Murtaugh.
I'm like, wow, Murtaugh.
Oh, man.
Like,
yeah, no, exactly.
He's living the dream. He's about to retire, and he never does, though, which is kind of sucks.
Yeah, goes on to keep making movies.
He's eating bacon for breakfast. Has like a... Oh, what did we think? Oh, actually, I was going to ask you, Brian, how did you feel about, I guess, Mel Gibson in the beginning, him kind of just, this is another kind of Shane Black kind of, what do I want to say?
Ism?
Trope. Trope, thank you, of a loner or a guy lonely, you know, going through dark times, especially in the holidays.
Watching
the Bugs Bunny
Christmas
special.
Carol while he's sitting there wanting to eat a bullet and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all very Mel Gibson-like quality because he is a fan of, you know, slapstick comedy like that, the Three Stooges and Looney Tunes and stuff. So it is very dark to see him there just looking at a picture of his dead wife, just crying and then putting a gun in. And then in the background music is that saxophone mixed in every now and then of Bugs Bunny.
Oh, the Michael's
like, Merry Christmas.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I thought you were talking about the score, the Michael Kamen
score.
Which is kind of very, you know, like Aveline was saying, very 80s with like the harmonica or trumpet, kind of noirish. Not harmonica, no. what do you call it?
Synth and harmonica.
Saxophone. Is it saxophone or trumpet? I don't know.
No, yeah. Saxophone.
Saxophone. Okay. Thank you. Sorry. Sorry. Yeah, that's huge in the 80s. Sorry, harmonica. Oh, yeah, this is Blues Travelers doing the soundtrack.
It's John Popper. I want to hear that soundtrack.
Actually, that'd be good.
I'm sure somebody's on YouTube. No, I mean, that scene itself, I mean, it shows that it's very... That's the thing about this movie, too. It goes from, you know, funny but buddy cop movie to, like, good action to then just... This is really fucking dark. I mean, that's how you start your movie is you start your movie with this rollicking like jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rack. And then all of a sudden you hear the sax and there's some naked prostitute high off her mind and then jumps off the building. And yeah, that's how you start your movie. And it's, okay, this isn't going to be your funny. But this is also the ultimate dad movie, I want to say. Also, because I know that this was one of my dad's favorites, and I'm sure Aileen just said your dad and everything. It's just that there's something again. I think all the dads are like they really want to be Riggs when they're really Murtaugh.
Yeah.
That's what it is with that. One question I do have that I kind of noticed this also How much would you hate to live next door to Murtaugh?
How would after you, all these four movies? Probably
after all pissed. These four movies, even the first movie, just I would be fucking furious.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Because
yeah.
all of a sudden you wake up at like 10 o'clock at night and you're like, what is that racket? And there's some, you know, these two crazy white guys on your neighbor's lawn jujitsu moving each other, fighting yeah. each other oh. while the cops are like, Back off, little bite.
Yeah, I don't know if we want to get into this because I know that's toward the end of the movie because I still have other things to say. But since you mentioned it, the ending is just so okay. We'll save it.
Yeah, we'll save it because the ending is crazy. But what were you gonna say? What were you gonna say before all that? What else did you want to talk about?
Did you have something to say?
You said you did.
Oh, well, I was going to mention the ending, but I'm not going to mention it, so no, we'll get to it.
You said there was other stuff before that you want to talk about.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember.
Okay, pass the dice to me. Got it.
Damn, because I'm trying to remember everything.
Okay, we can talk about the ending. Who cares? Whatever. We can talk about the ending. So, yeah, so basically, Gary B., after you know, one, it has the big nightclub shootout, which is a staple of the 80s. Then it goes into, you know, Mel Gibson chasing Gary Busey down Hollywood Boulevard and everything and all that. Which then leads to Gary Busey sleeping away and then going to Murtaugh's house and going to get his family. Yeah. And they end up crashing a cop car through Murtaugh's house because why not? And then Gary Busey and Mel Gibson fighting. They have him dead to right. All they have to do is just handcuff him, and it's done. But Murtaugh's like, yeah, fuck him up, Riggs. Pushes him and lets him fight a karate fight in the middle of the lawn while all of LAPD comes to try and arrest him. And Murtaugh going, it's okay. It's okay. I take full responsibility. He shot two of our guys. Let him fight. Okay.
It's like, cool. It's like Anchorman. They're just talking. They're just talking. But this is where it's so ridiculous. But yeah. I mean, but I get it. Like, okay, here's like, okay, they got to prove like which one, which is the bigger man. Very machismo.
I mean, and also Riggs' character, like to let him get out all his crazy energy. I guess that kind of made sense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we don't let him out. He's gonna take it out on somebody.
Exactly.
He's gonna take it out on which is the
public. He'll kill himself. He has suicidal tendencies, so let's just let him fight this guy instead.
So he doesn't fight himself. He's fine because he's gonna fuck himself up. But also at the same time, if somebody wanted to explain, like, man, why? What was up with the OJ trial? Why did he go away? Why did he get scot-free? I would show him a tape of Lethal Weapon, the end of Lethal Weapon, where this whole movie is also showing LAPD cops as like these jolly, oh, we're going to sing Christmas carols in the office and everything. We're kind of
that was funny. Here.
And
that
it's
part just, was hilarious.
Then at the end, them just, you know, yeah, it's like, what's going on? I have to call the cops. Oh, they're all across the street, honey. It's okay. They're watching the fight and not doing anything about it. Okay, cool. Yeah, let them have it. And then the next movie, Murtaugh has a bomb attached to his toilet, and the house explodes. And then, like, it seems like every movie the Murtaugh house gets fucked up more.
Yeah, how the family survives. Oh, again, I mean, this is in part two when the daughter does like a condom commercial, which is hilarious.
That becomes
a running bit.
That joke when Joe Pesci's like, oh, this commercial, you got to see this chick. She's hot. She's the hottest chick.
I forgot to mention that the daughter also has a thing for Mel Gibson, which makes sense. I figured everybody.
I love that little rap that the littlest daughter does.
Too, yeah.
My sister got a crush on Riggs. It's so funny.
Well, it's such a family dynamic, and the kids are perfect with that, and like teasing the older sister for having the obvious crush and everything and all that. But yeah, no, I mean, again, and it just, I think that's what also just, it makes the movie so fun is, again, it humanizes everybody. It shows, you know, again, it shows Mel Gibson having, you know, the family that he's always wanted and everything. And, you know, it shows it at the end when he gives a Murtaugh symbolic gift, the hollow point bullet, which he has been saving to commit suicide, as he does not need it anymore because he has a family now. Yeah. He's not so alone, even though he had a dog. God.
Yeah. But he brings him in, though. But brings him in finally. The dog, Sam.
He's
like,
can I bring a friend? And then the dog, I was like, oh.
Yeah, that's a favorite part of Aveline. Oh, and also she liked the fact that Myrtle's cat's named Burbank.
Yeah.
That is a good cat name.
That is.
Yeah, great. We were thinking the same thing.
Burbank, get off the pet. I would totally name it that.
I like traditional names. I like either really like city names is good, and also traditional names for cats, like, or just dogs in general, or any animal, just like, hey Joe, knock it off. Like just something like, you know, like, oh, I had a rough day. Chris shit on the floor again. Like, what? Chris shit on the floor, and then he ate the plants. Like, who's Chris? My dog. Oh, okay. So human names and just street names or city names. That's always fun. So that's what my cat Rancho Cucamonga says. So.
Wow.
Rancho Cucamonga.
Yeah.
Yeah. You took it too far.
Okay. I tried. Any hoozle. but yeah, no.
No,
go ahead.
I was going to mention also just other similarities, like little Shane Black traits that are in a lot of his movies. So besides the buddy cop and the humor and Christmas, this movie has the same helicopter shot going into a house near a cliff by the ocean, just like in Iron Man 3. So that's kind of taken kind of, you know, from that.
Yeah.
And we'll get to it with the next movie, but another sniper scene.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they really like snipers in this movie. I mean,
snipers are cool, yo. Snipers are cool. You sit there, you take the shot, bam, from far away. Yeah.
Well, that's another thing that was actually pretty funny, too, where Murtaugh and Riggs were at the shooting range.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then he makes that smiley face, which is actually pretty funny.
Yeah, that's one of the parts that I actually, like, always remembered.
And he's just,
have a nice day.
Just summon.
Just, yeah, whatever. Who cares? That's it. Whatever. There's also, also this movie directed by Richard Donner.
Dick Donner.
Dick Donner. I love the name Richard, you dick. He's also directed 1976's The Omen, Superman the Movie with Chris Reeve, Goonies, Scrooged, all the Lethal Weapon movies. Dick Donner is, I don't know, like, yeah, he's a really good director, and I think this also just shows the kind of laid back style that he can have and also shoot at. With that said, though, do you know who was originally going to direct this movie?
The Lethal Weapon movie?
Yes.
I have no idea.
Well, let me tell you. It was... Well, goddammit, where'd it go?
Oh, wait. I think I know. Leonard Nimoy.
You are correct, sir. Spock himself was going to originally direct Lethal Weapon. Leonard Nimoy was going to direct this movie, but he backed off because he felt he couldn't do – he was kind of nervous about doing action scenes, and he was too busy directing the film hit Three Men and a Little Baby at the time, which was like the number one movie the year it came out. It was a huge fucking movie, and it was
never seen it.
I didn't see that when I was little.
Did you love it?
I think I did, but it's been so long.
Yeah. It's a movie. The Three Men and a Little Baby has that weird side plot that all 80s movies had, which was a cocaine bust for whatever reason. They had to
Hollywood Snow, I told you.
Yeah, it's Hollywood Snow. It was huge. It was. Every single 80s action movie had something to do with cocaine. James Bond with one of the Timothy Dalton movies. This, everything. Like, yeah, it was huge because, you know, Hollywood loved cocaine, literally, and in telling stories.
It's also in Die Hard as well, in the beginning.
Yep, exactly. No, exactly. Exactly. Cocaine. It's fun. So I've heard. Don't do cocaine, kids. It may be fun, but just don't, because, man, that sticks with you. Any hoozle. So, Shane Black makes this. Is there any other things about Lethal Weapon that we want to talk about?
I mean, it's a great movie. It gets better and better. And man, like, for it being as old as it is, like, it doesn't feel that old. It's still
pretty good. It does feel like a modern, like, you could take this and make it a TV show, which they actually did a few years back, starring Damon Wayans as Murtaugh and some guy as Riggs, who then got fired and replaced by Sean William Scott. And supposedly it's not that bad of a show, actually. Like, the trailer, when you watch it, you're like, this looks horrible. But people were like, actually, this is actually a pretty fun show. This is a good, this is actually a fun show, when, especially when Sean William Scott got in it and stuff. But that, and it was supposed to keep going, but Damon Wayans did not want to do it anymore, so they just canceled the show. But it does show that, I think it does, it is a story, and the script itself, you know, is kind of, you could plant it and make it today, and it would be a big hit, I think, still. Just because of the, you just have to have the right chemistry. I think the script, and actually this might actually be true, is that the script lives or dies by the chemistry of your two leading co-stars, two leading stars, which you can see through Mel Gibson and Danny Glover and everything that makes these movies fun.
Yeah, because I think as the movies go on, they become more comedic. Like, this is the first one where it has, does a good job being like an action movie and a comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And then as the sequels go on, it just, I mean, it gets more comedic. But that's fine, because in the end, that's, I think, what people really like is just the family dynamic and the chemistry between the two.
The movies do kind of go down in quality as it goes on. I think the less and less crazy Riggs is.
Yeah, but the plots get ridiculous. Like, look at, I don't know if you even paid attention to the plot in this movie. Like, it's so not important.
No, but, it isn't.
But it kind of got complicated. So the girl jumps. Mm-hmm. And then you find out in the movie that
she was really poisoned.
She was poisoned already, which led to
die. Yeah.
To Tom Atkins. And you realize Tom Atkins' character, you know, that's his daughter. And he was like, they're old buddies with Murtaugh back in, again, Vietnam. Again, that's a huge thing also.
He owes him.
But that's a big thing
in
the 80s as well. Like, Rambo is the same thing. Everybody like, oh, from back in the Vietnam days. So there, it's like a little spillover of that.
Vietnam was a fucked up war, and for a lot of people, when they came home, they weren't getting the accolades that, you know, World War II did or anything. People were being spit on. They weren't.
Yeah.
They were forgotten, and so that plays a big part in movies like this, and just in themes of those movies. Because now you have a bunch of Hollywood directors, except for Shane Black. He didn't go to Vietnam, I don't think. He
fought the Predator.
That's true. He did fight the Predator, so that is his own Vietnam. God, he was in the shit, man.
He saw real stuff.
Yeah, he saw shit. He saw Jean-Claude Van Damme as the Predator and then leaving for another guy. I mean, you do see a lot of those movies, you know, becoming that boiler point for the Vietnam War and everything. That is a big part. But yeah, like you said, the plot gets messy where it's like, wait, why was Murtaugh there, or why was Riggs there getting shot down to, why did he have to pretend to be dead? Like, why did he have to, like, it just seems like more complicated as it goes along, but you're like, eh, whatever, who cares?
I mean, those are things that I noticed, but it didn't, you know, stop me from enjoying the movie, because you realize it, but it's just so funny how they kind of make it so complicated. The girl jumping, she was already dead. And then them going to and there was like a hooker that witnessed everything. And then they go to her house, that house explodes. And then they talk to the neighborhood kids. You know, Alfred, the guy with the 3D glasses. And I'm going to nitpick something. So the kid is telling him, describing Mr. Joshua, which is another conversation altogether. The kind of name Mr. Joshua is so weird. So anyway,
the original title of the character is probably Hank, and he was like, "I won't be called Mr. Joshua. And they were like, really, "Why Joshua?"
It was like, that's so funny. Weird.
Joshua is close to Jesus and Hosea, which is our Jesus Christ. Okay, fine, Gary, just Mr. Joshua. Fuck.
This is the beginning
Thank you.
I bet you it was his idea too, to hold his hand underneath the lighter too.
They weren't even filming. He didn't even know
that was that was a gag reel.
That was a gag reel. He wasn't even. They were like, "Holy shit!" He was just like, "Hey, look at this act on you. Just do it."
He's a method actor. Like, this is what he does to get into the role.
You can use this in
And they accidentally noticed that the cameras were running, and they were like, well, shit, why don't we just...
And the guy freaking out is actually freaking out in real life. Like, dude, I just want to go home. I'll be on my trailer. So anyway, the
I got a guest spot on L.A. Law next week.
So this kid with the 3D glasses that gives the, you know, the description of Mr. Joshua, he's saying that he points out the tattoo, which I think is kind of green and it has red in it. The kid has 3D glasses. If you have those,
oh, here we go.
If you are wearing those colors won't appear and no image would appear. And how would he actually know what the tattoo looks like with those glasses on?
How do you know he was wearing the glasses when he saw him? You're being ridiculous.
Because he's wearing them right now. It just happened. He's been hanging out with his friends this whole time. That's probably his look. I'm just saying, I call bullshit. That and even if he didn't have his glasses, cool 3D look. Glasses, how can he even... Ticking. You even said so yourself. Like, how did he see the tattoo from far away?
Bill Kipps... Well, one, I don't remember seeing Gary Busey or Mr. Joshua's tattoo. I don't know how clean he kept it.
Exactly.
Like Mel Gibson's, it was like faded. You could hardly see it and everything. I get what you're saying and everything. But at the same time, yeah, it is a movie.
All I said was the kid had to be really close to see the tattoo that was pretty small.
I agreed. Plus wearing the 3D glasses, which you don't think he wore, but he was wearing them right there. Okay. No.
And plus the kid wasn't really given any information. It was his friends that was giving him the information. And then Danny Glover just going like, was he blonde? Did he have a tattoo like Popeye? Like Popeye? It's just like, the way he talked to him, man, talking down to him. I'm Detective Murtaugh.
I think Riggs was actually more real with the kids.
Yeah.
These idiots don't know anything. But the kids knew everything. As soon as you go, oh, you're going to see Miss Dixie or something like that.
Dixie's gonna get busted.
Yeah. They knew everything. These kids. Yeah, these kids know.
Because they're neighborhood punks that you don't usually look at. Like, these are the kids.
Well, you don't know they're punks, though. They were just playing outside, dude.
You're right. Don't be that guy. After 35, I think all young kids are punks. So
we are all the Murtaughs now.
I open the door. I see a group of kids or teens, and I go, oh no, youth. And I just shut the door, and I'm staying in for the rest of the day. I don't want to deal with that. They might take my money or make fun of me.
They're gonna steal my newspaper. No. Yeah.
They're going to steal my newspaper. They're going to fuck up my lawn.
If they hang out by your car, do you just not go into work that day?
I call out.
Yeah.
I call out. I get out in the work. I see the kids hanging around my car and I go, it's another call out day, sir. And it's Brian again. Are those kids back again? I don't want to talk about it. Click. are those kids back? Yeah, no. So, I mean, it's again, but that shows another. It is a fun scene, you know, them interacting with kids and everything too. But it would be hard to see Mr. Joshua's tattoo. But if it's Gary Busey, I'm assuming that tattoo is like his whole forearm, which it makes it even easier to see.
Perhaps you're so, right.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, who knows? The only the minds of those kids know. So yeah, anything else with a Lethal Weapon?
I'm out.
Are you out?
Yeah.
There was something else.
Yeah.
The cops kidnapping the daughter.
If you think about it.
Oh, the kind of what you were saying about, you were saying that both of your guys' fathers were into these movies. Kind of like being the tough guy. But again, I think this is the start of the idea of, tough guys need to be sensitive. I think this is kind of one of the first. Before, it was like a tough guy, you know, kill, beat him up, you know.
Dirty hair.
No crying. Yeah, no crying. Now you have like a therapist arguing with the chief saying that, you know, Riggs is unstable, yada, 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 and the captain doesn't really care.
The captain's saying that, like, well, if he kills himself, I'm wrong.
Yeah, doesn't give a shit. Yeah, doesn't care.
Yeah, it doesn't care.
But I think that's kind of lead to that.
Right after that, you do have that conversation between the whatever guy who, you know, Murtaugh is you know, reading some information, and the guy's talking about, like, guys in the 80s are so sensitive now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And he's just like, why'd you cry? Why? I cried.
I cried in bed. Were you by yourself? Why do you think I was crying?
Perfect.
Merry Christmas. And then just walks away.
Yeah. And then he calls him, you're the man of the 80s. And I think it was trying to really just say kind of how, the culture it was in that time, that, you know, the tough guy-ness is slowly fading out. Because this film was in 87. So yeah, because it's slowly getting, slowly fading out.
Yeah, exactly. It is that start of that whole thing where, hey, it's okay to cry, man. If you have to yell at the moon, yell at the moon.
Yeah. Boom. Gross Point Blank comes in. The whole therapist, psychologist thing comes into play.
Sopranos. And then,
it's
okay, guys. It's okay to cry and talk to therapists. It's fun. But, so this movie was a huge, gigantic hit. It got Shane Black on the map. He had a lot of work during that time period. He also wrote, you know, the script to The Monster Squad, which is a movie I never heard until in my 20s. Was that the same with you guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think I bought it a few years ago, maybe.
I just remember I was like 23, 24, and some friends were like, yeah, Wolfman's got nards. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? And they're like, you've never seen The Monster Squad? And I'm like, I've never heard of The Monster Squad. And it just blew up after that point. I think we missed it.
I think our age group, B-Rai, I think missed it by maybe like
but
four
I'm talking
or five
to people.
Years, I think.
But I'm also talking to people that were around my age too, around our age as well.
Oh yeah,
I don't know. Yeah. I don't. Yeah, I have no idea how the hell I missed it because it's a movie that's was
should have been
directed right to, I guess.
Because everybody preferred Goonies than anything else. I feel like those two are the same kind of movies.
Yeah, I mean, you know, group of kids fighting and everything. So basically, he wrote the sequel, Lethal Weapon 2. He thought Riggs should die. The Warner Brothers said, no, we want a franchise with these movies. He said, forget it, I'm done. He burnt out. He felt burnt out. He left conflicts with studio and stuff, left the project after 6 months. After that, he took a couple years off, got a huge deal with the next movie, The Last Boy Scout, which at the time earned him the most money for a screenwriter. At $1.75 million. He also did the same with Last Action Hero. But he would receive a record-breaking $4 million for our next movie, The Long Kiss Goodnight.
Hello, girls. Caitlin, come help me in the kitchen. Hurry up, because I forget where it is.
That's her mom. She's got amnesia.
What if you couldn't remember your real name, your first kiss, or your last goodbye?
I don't remember.
Honey, you have an ETA on that carrot?
Stow it.
And then suddenly...
I used to do this! I'm a chef! Yahoo!
Without warning...
Give me something else!
Celery! Italian!
All your memories...
Name's Charlie. I'm coming back.
Came flooding back to you.
Evening, Charlie. Long time.
One bullet at a time.
I got movement on Samantha Kane.
Good.
I may have a lead on someone. They still have some of her stuff.
This man, he's gonna help me find some things out, so we'll be safe.
Your full name is Charlene Elizabeth Baltimore. This could be trouble.
My name is Samantha Kane.
No, forget all that.
I'm in the PTA.
Then quit. You're an assassin working for the United States government.
We have 24 hours. Find her. I'm gonna kill her.
Run for your life!
Charlie Baltimore's alive, sir.
Who are you?
Name's Charlie. The spy.
Back when we first met, you were all like, oh, fooey, I burned the darn muffins. Now, you go into a bar, 10 minutes later, sailors come running out. What up with that?
Honk if there's any trouble.
Yeah, so Miss Daisy, I be honking.
If you have plans for a calm, quiet evening.
Cover your ears. Hey, should we get a dog?
It's time to kiss them all. Good night.
Thank you.
Gina Davis, Samuel L. Jackson, The Long Kiss Goodnight, directed by Rennie Harlan.
Long Kiss Goodnight comes out in 1996, co-produced and directed by Rennie Harlan. Screenplay by Shane Black. Also with starring Brian Cox, David Morse, Craig Bierko, Samuel L. Jackson, and Gina Davis. Guys, what did you think about the spy action thriller film, The Long Kiss Goodnight?
Well, this was my very first time seeing that, so...
Same here, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it was, like, so entertaining to see Gina Davis in that way, because I've never, ever seen her like that. I mean, like, I don't even think I paid attention to the story as much as I did just her acting. Like, she is just so great in the movie. I really enjoyed her.
Yeah, I really kind of want to talk about Gina Davis, because I think Gina Davis, for whatever reason, this is actually the 1-2 punch of Cutthroat Island, also directed by her husband, Rennie Harlan. And then this movie, which wasn't a big hit, kind of put her in a movie jail, and it kind of stopped her career for whatever reason. And I honestly think there'll be a little in the next year or so, a few years, you know, Dolly Parton's having her moment. I think Gina Davis is going to be starting to get looked at again as like, hey, she was really good. Like, she's really underrated. You got Thelma Louise, you got her in this, which I thought she was great in and fun. The Fly, Beetlejuice, League of Their Own was a huge fucking win, I think. And not only that, she's also I think she's part of Mensa, and also she was on the U.S. Olympics team for archery
She also score like really high. Does she have like a really high IQ as well?
Yeah, I think she was part of Mensa. So yeah, she's part of Mensa, and yeah, in July 1999, Davis was one of 300 women who vied for the semifinals berth in U.S. Olympic archery team. She placed 24th and did not qualify the team, but participated as a wild card entry in the Sydney International Golden Arrow competition. She stated she was not an athlete growing up, and that her introduction to archery was in 1997, 2 years before her tryout. So she tries archery for the hell of it, and 2 years later, trying to compete for the U.S. Olympic team.
So she's just good at everything. That's amazing.
She's great. Yeah.
She's one talented lady.
I kind of agree with both of you. I think that's when it comes to this movie, it's all about Gina Davis. I mean, I don't understand how, I mean, people that like Bourne or Hannah or John Wick, I mean, before all of that, this could have been a franchise.
Yeah.
She's absolutely great. Like Ava was saying, just her acting as the mom, learning little things is probably learning little things that, oh, maybe I was an assassin as the movie goes on, is great.
Of her like cutting up dinner and going like, I'm a chef. God.
Yeah,
like, I'm a chef.
Yeah, her relationship with like her little girl as well. Yeah. Sorry, bro. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, basically, if you don't know the plot, it starts out with Gina Davis talking about how 8 years beforehand she was found unconscious and she doesn't remember anything past 8 years ago. She doesn't remember her life or anything. She is the salt of the earth community with she's a school teacher. The town knows her. She's like the perfect housewife, the perfect teacher, the perfect girlfriend. And all of a sudden her mind starts coming back and realizing like, oh, she really is this person. And now after being Mrs. Claus in the holiday parade for the town, people start realizing like, oh, wait a minute. The assassin that she was, she's now this person and stuff. And now she has to go and find her life with Samuel L. Jackson, who is the private detective that's been kind of bilking her of money for years trying to find out who she really is. Comes along with her for the ride and everything for that. But yeah, no, that one scene in the kitchen, especially with her finding out like she's really good with a knife. And she's like, I guess I'm a chef. And she like throws the knife at the wall, cuts a tomato in half and all that. It's a fun scene and she's just great in it.
I love how she says that line several times. Chefs do that.
Chefs do that. Yeah,
yeah, especially after killing the assassin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
does the same thing.
She she does the same thing, and then she like licks her finger, which is covered in whipped cream and blood, and she's just like, chefs do that.
She's so great. I mean, not to take away.
Kid up and chucks her.
Oh my god! She's really being a bad mommy in the beginning. There, she does a lot of pretty messed up things to the kid.
I love the throwbacks too, of like the Christmas party in the beginning, and you see her this like one of her neighbors, the little kid, little chubby kid trying to sell cigarettes, and she goes, "Hey, you know, next time you do that, I'll kill you," but in a very motherly way. Again,
later
when she witnesses again, now
much more dastardly.
Man, but again, I can't talk enough about her performance.
I mean, not to say anything about Samuel Jackson. He's actually really great, and the whole buddy cop thing.
The good anchor of this, and just like
they both play off each other really good.
He's always been good.
I liked
at that,
them
though.
Together.
Yeah. He's always been the guy that just kind of makes, you know, just observations of just like, when I first met you, you were like, oh gee whiz, my pop roast is burning. Oh darn. Now you're like kicking people's asses. What the hell? No, it's good.
No, I was just saying he's very good at that as well, you know, with that. Their length, you know, their banter back and forth. And he's honest too. Like, you kind of see his background, how he served time, and the way he's telling a story, how he used to be a cop, and you think he got framed. And then when Tina Davis like, oh, so your buddy framed you? No, I took it. And they kind of I did it. You know, I like how they kind of play that angle, like, oh yeah, maybe he's just misunderstood. No, he's, you know, he took it, you know, he did his time, you know. They were very grounded in reality, I think, until the action comes in. Again, the villains in this is kind of like Lethal Weapon or just secondary. They're typical, you know, bad guys. Nothing really all that special.
It's Craig Bierko, who I remember just being, I've always seen him as just like the face actor, which he's very, his face just is always acting, it seems like. With
which
like
one is that? Is that, is that,
he's
the guy,
he's the main guy that ends up being the father of daughter.
I did not really care for him. He was too pretty for me. I don't buy him as
a villain
at all. He's maybe like sworn. A stockbroker. Maybe a stockbroker, maybe, but not like an assassin or whatever he was.
I want to say just laid back enough, like he didn't really care. Like, okay, boys, let's get her.
Yeah,
like,
he wasn't kinda, sinister like, it was just, enough.
He wasn't. Yeah, he was more jokey. He was more just like, I could take this or leave this gentleman. Like, it probably should have been
the other guy.
David Moore. David Moore. It's like, yeah, he should be the main guy. It should be reversed. Yeah, right. Like, these should be reversed right now.
Very similar to Iron Man 3, where the bad guy just doesn't do anything for me, and I'm only focusing on the good guy in the movie.
Exactly.
That's how I felt throughout the whole movie. I did not care any of the scenes with the bad guys in it. It was like, all about
get to
her.
The point. Yeah. Yeah, I feel the same way. That's kind of how I felt like about Lethal Weapon 2, like when the daughter gets kidnapped and they go to the desert. I mean, cool scene, but I'm like, I want to go back to the family. I want that, you know, that banter. But in this, I mean, there wasn't too much of like a lull. Like, it's always with Gina Davis.
No, like,
Samuel
the movie
Jackson.
Had a great pace to it. You know?
No, it was very, when it was action, it was action. When it wasn't, it was good. Like, again, I mean, Rennie Harlan himself, you know, what other movies did Rennie Harlan do?
Well, he did my favorite Freddy movie, part
Nightmare
4.
Nightmare on Elm Street 4.
But yeah, he also did
Die Hard 2.
Cliffhanger. Die Hard 2, yeah. Cliffhanger.
Deep Blue Sea.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that one.
That was his big thing. He was also the director of Cutthroat Island, which held the Guinness record for biggest box office flop of all time.
Yeah, I always thought that was the movie that kind of killed his career and Gina Davis's career.
Right. No, it was right after this. It was actually this one that did it, because the movie reception wise, the film's opening, it grossed 9 million, placing it third for the films that released that weekend. The film grossed, 33 million in the States. Internationally, it did 56 million for a total worldwide gross of 89 million, which isn't bad, but it kind of like killed her career for whatever reason, which is,
I don't understand.
A damn shame, because, well, again, that's a different time. It's in the mid 90s. She's already, she says it in the movie, she doesn't know her age, maybe 35. That's way too old for Hollywood. But no, yeah, I'm total agreeance with her. I don't know why she was put in that jail. It was just one of those things. It's bullshit Hollywood stories, because, again, like, any role you've seen her in, she's always fucking entertaining. She's such a powerhouse, especially in this movie where it's just like, mm-hmm. Yeah, this should be a franchise. It's like every now and then, like, there was the sequel. Originally, the last page of Black's original 1994 script stated that there would be a sequel called The Kiss After Lightning, which never happened. It supposedly has been, a sequel has been in the works since 2007, but nothing's been, you know, definite or anything reported of August 2020. Again, I think this is a movie that I think is severely underrated.
Agreed.
With that, especially during the Christmas stuff and everything too. Again, it's that Shane Blackism of wanting to, introspective, find out who you really are type situation. And this is kind of that perfect time frame for it and everything.
And I think also just for, it could be like a good like date night movie as well.
Yeah.
Like, if you have, like, let's say a girlfriend or a wife that's not into action movies, I really recommend show her this, because would love. And who doesn't? Which girl doesn't like Gina Davis? I'm sure a lot of them grew up watching their movies. This really just
League of Their Own and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I've seen this before,
mm-hmm.
many times, and it's been so long, been waiting for Evelyn to watch it. So I'm so happy that she did. But again, it kind of makes me want to watch more of Gina Davis. And also, again, I still can't believe that, man, it took like 10 years before the idea of an assassin with no memory to become popular again. Even with like a female, like Hannah was also about like a little girl.
Yeah.
Or Alias, another like, you know, female, you know, kind of concept.
I mean, it is weird that, like, I mean, it just that a lot of people just, I mean, it took so long for a Wonder Woman movie to be made. Yeah. And she was from the 30s, a character from the 30s, and it took almost 70 plus years to make a Wonder Woman movie happen. And it's you would get these you would get these questions from people like, why hasn't a Wonder Woman movie been made? And you would have, like, you know, David Goyer, who wrote, you know, Dark Knight and, you know, those movies, going like, well, it's just, she's a really hard character to make a movie of. Like, how do you do this? And then somebody would be like, well, Marvel's doing a movie with a talking tree and a raccoon. Like, why? Like, for whatever reason, Hollywood has always been kind of just like, yeah, people won't get female action star. And it's like, no, we can. You just haven't made a, you haven't tried. You haven't tried making a movie. And when you do, like A Long Kiss Goodnight, you market it weird and stuff. Because I think that was another thing that Black said that this movie, you know, kind of suffered from, was the advertising. And when you look at... when you look at the trailer for this, it is very like, she was a you know, woman that didn't know what she wanted. It seemed more comedic than action packed. So I think people kind of got like, oh, it's just, you know, Gina Davis.
Well, it's not silly at all.
Yeah.
I put it up there with any of those movies that I mentioned before, like Bourne and all that. I think it's very entertaining. Definitely 90s element to it.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah,
if you like Die Hard or Lethal Weapon,
you'll like this
Last Boy Scout. Absolutely, highly recommend.
Oh yeah,
and it's super refreshing too, seeing like a female badass kicking butt. I mean, the action sequences I love of her just jumping out, like when there was a bomb and they had to like jump through the window, but she had to shoot the glass.
Yeah,
jumps out and then shoots at the ice. I mean, they just have like really cool action sequences.
Yeah, it's great.
I'm like, man, but I'm surprised no one really steals from. I'm like, man, this is so good. This is, you know, this works today.
The final scene of her cutting the rope to as the guy in flames comes down, grabs his gun, shoots at the helicopter, and it blows up, telling him to scream for me after she told him, like, that line when she was telling him, like, you know, oh, I'm going to kill you and you're going to scream for me. Am I lying now? Can you tell if I'm lying?
Yeah.
And, like, his face just kind of goes, yeah. Like, yeah. Okay. Like, all right. No, you're not. Like, all right. Well, anyway.
I like, too, the element of Christmas, too. She was, like, pulling herself up on a Christmas on the string very lights.
Yeah,
and, like, exactly. All the lights are popping. I was like, man, this looks really cool.
Again, when they were stuck in the freezer, too. I really like the scene where she, you know, when she puts the gasoline and she's trying to make it spark and it's not working. And then she finally kind of breaks down. You kind of see her. I think this is the first time you see the two characters now become one, or the personalities.
Yeah.
Become one now. Now because she's her daughter embracing goes having like, her daughter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mommy, I have it. And it's just kind of what she taught her in the beginning. Like, oh, you told me to keep matches here. And then, you know, they have like the little band conversation. Mommy, are we going to die? No, honey. They are. And then lights the match. And right before she
lights the match, hey, she's like, do you want to get a dog?
Okay. Boom. Very badass. Yeah. Badass.
Yeah, that was great.
Exactly. I do wish Brian Cox stayed around a little longer. I did like that chemistry between him, Samuel Jackson, and Gina Davis. I kind of wish he was kept around a little longer instead of killed off immediately, like pretty much the next scene after you didn't see it and everything. But... Yeah, agreed. No, it's again, it that whole, the movie itself is just such a underrated movie, and I really hope it finds another, I hope the internet, you know, gets around in the next couple of years, a hashtag going like, hashtag Long Kiss Goodnight or something, like, hey, this movie's really awesome, right? Like, I hope more people see this, because I don't think it's talked enough about with that stuff, but yeah, and again, a great Christmas movie.
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah. Doesn't make the boyfriend too much of a dweeb either? Like, you could tell why she would be with this guy even after she finds out she's this deadly assassin and everything, can realize, like, oh yeah, okay, I could see why she would be with him. Like, he isn't a total dweeb. Like you see a lot of movies doing that out to be and such. But yeah, I don't know. I really enjoyed this. I enjoyed both these movies, which next time will lead us into another couple Shane Black movies. One, his directorial debut with Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, teaming him up with Robert Downey Jr. and Val Kilmer, which then led to Iron Man 3, also starring Robert Downey Jr. I'm looking forward to those. Well, especially Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, because I haven't seen that in years.
That'll be your first time.
Really?
I've been trying to get her to watch it every Christmas.
Yeah.
So I'm glad. Yeah, so I'm really excited for her to see that. Because I know that she likes Shane Black movies. Yeah. I think now this is the only one maybe she hasn't seen, except for maybe like The Last Boy Scout, but that's fine. And has Robert Downey Jr., which she also loves. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like a modern film noir.
Yep. Exactly.
Which she also loves. So.
Sounds cool.
Yeah, no, I think you'll enjoy it, and I think you guys at home will enjoy it, too, if you want to watch with us. Be sure, again, those movies are Kiss Kiss, Bang Bang, and Iron Man 3, so watch along, join us back again, and listen to our thoughts and everything. Guys, Edwin, Ava, is there anything else? Any last words, any parting things you'd like to say before we wrap things up?
I got nothing.
I was gonna say Gina Davis is such a sexy, powerful woman.
She really is. She is incredibly. She doesn't get enough respect. Definitely look into Gina Davis if you guys don't know who Gina Davis is. Watch her movies. Quick Change Gina is also Davis. Another good one.
We love you.
Exactly.
They should have changed the Madonna song. Gina Davis.
Yeah. The Gina Davis podcast coming soon.
So next week, Earth Girls Are Easy.
Oh, God, that movie was on all the time.
Or Transylvania 5000. That's another weird one.
Hell yeah. Well, I mean, her big breakout was The Fly with her with Jeff Goldblum and everything. That was her big breakout. But, yeah, so again, more next week in the Gina Davis cast. Be sure to you know, check us out on Instagram at Rewind Replay Record. Message us, all that stuff. Maybe Twitter soon. I don't know. I'm kind of flirting with that idea. Probably not, though. Yeah, I don't. Something different. Probably not. I don't know. Just something to say right now. No. But anyway, thank you for listening. Please rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends about us, all that jazz. Edwin, anything else? Any last parting words or anything?
No, sir.
Cool. Great. I don't have to come up with something on the fly. I appreciate it. I appreciate you, sir. All right, guys.
Well, I'm just hoping that you cue the song that I chose right and like and lead into it.
You always do this. Why do you always do this?
Because I like it.
Okay.
It was happening already. It's still going. But now we're going to go ahead and I'm going to just say the last words and go right into the song. So be bad and watch shit, everybody. You gotta be fortunate.